Good evening. Welcome to the Solari Report. Today is March 12th, 2015. I'm Catherine Alston Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Hold that date, April 25th in New York. Richard Dolan's going to be joining me for a long lunch with subscribers. If you're not on the East Coast and interested in receiving an invitation, let us know. We'll be mailing to the East Coast subscribers. We have posted a link on the blog to the Secret Space Program and Breakaway Civilization presentations. They're now free online up on YouTube. And if you haven't had a chance to watch them, I recommend them strongly to you. We've posted them in the blog in the order which I recommend you watch them and really take your time. It's a paradigm-shifting experience. Also, our physical copies of the annual wrap-up are available. We're going to be selling them to subscribers essentially at our cost of making them. It's fairly expensive to make these. They're very well done. And it's a 96-page book, full color, and we encourage you to get it and share it with your friends and family. That's linked up on the blog as well. Remember, you have full access to the same material in web presentation, in flipbook form, and in PDF form. So you can access all of those at your resource, at your subscriber resource page. Our theme tonight is the U.S. dollar rises at tax time. And what's important to understand about both tax time and U.S. dollar is it's putting a world of people in a financial squeeze, both of them. And some of them are, you know, some people are in a squeeze on from both. I've written several commentaries about it. One was, the most recent was Navigating a Rising Dollar. Let me just read it to you real quickly. It's short. I try to stay in a higher mind. However, if one more financial or geopolitical guru tells me that the U.S. dollar is about to collapse, I will want to smack them. The dollar is up sharply this morning. At that time, the dollar index was 98. It was the beginning of the week. Borrowers around the world have been borrowing cheap dollars. Now, with a global slowdown and quantitative easing over, dollars are harder to earn and getting more expensive. If the Fed raises interest rates, many countries and institutions will wake up in a dollar trap. That means the dollar can go much higher. The one borrower has no problem is the U.S. government. They can just arrange for the Fed to print more. For many years, we've been navigating a falling U.S. dollar. That trend has reversed, and so long as it continues, we need to change our mindset and strategies accordingly. And I had a couple of good links. It's related reading to that one. The dollar is now up 24%, or the U.S. dollar index is up 24% since June. That's the highest in 12 years. We are at about 99.2 now. We spiked up over 100 yesterday, and so it's a very strong. Again, we haven't been here for 12 years, so we started at the beginning of March at 95, and to spike up that much to 100, that's what some people would call a parabolic move. Deutsche Bank says that the euro is going to drop through parity down to 0.85. So this is far from over. Franklin and I talk a lot about the strong dollar and what it means in our interview in the Precious Metals Market Report, which we posted today. So you can hear more about it if you want to, if you listen to the interview. The U.S. government, essentially, and private syndicates, private investment syndicates, have the power to use the dollar now to extract extraordinary wealth from the global economy. Part of the question is interest rates. If you look at what the ECB is doing in terms of printing and forcing interest rates negative in Europe, if the United States, if the central bank raises interest rates, particularly on the long end, again, it's going to just attract enormous flows into the dollar. And it's interesting because on one hand, you have domestically pension funds and insurance companies who really at this point cannot afford to operate at these low interest rates. And it is essential for them that they start to get higher yields on their portfolios. At the same time, if you raise interest rates to give them what they need, you can really clobber the emerging markets. Now, as painful as that may be for the emerging markets, it could set the United States up for the kind of global sweepstakes in terms of buying equity interests abroad that they enjoyed in 1997 in a similar kind of scenario. So So the question is, are we going to cause serious recession and pain globally to basically extract more wealth and to make sure that the domestic pension funds and insurance companies are in better shape? So there's a lot of tension about that and a lot of concern, particularly in the emerging markets, but also tax time. I had another commentary called The Ides of March. Let me just read it to you. There's pressure in the air. It's called tax time. U.S. corporate taxes are due on March 15th. I've always wondered about that date. Why choose a date famous through history for the assassination of Julius Caesar? Corporate tax time in the U.S. dovetails with annual SEC filings and the announcement of corporate earnings. Global slowdown and a rising dollar is putting pressure on corporate earnings. With the U.S. stock market levitating at or near all-time highs, the question is, what will happen if and when corporate earnings drop? Will PEs rise to offset, or is the market finally going to make that long overdue 10 to 25% correction? So, big question, and again, very tense time. Of course, it's not over. April 15th, we're all going to be paying individual taxes as well. Anyway, so check that out. It's a much longer commentary with some great links to it as well. Not to mention the March 15th when taxes are due is a Sunday, so they'll be due Monday, but tomorrow is Friday the 13th. So it's an interesting combination of events. The push to distract the psychic storm is definitely on. We see in Ferguson, the city manager and police chief resign as a result of the DOJ study, very political interference by the federal government. And then today, or last night, two policemen shot in an ambush outside the police department. I would give it a very high chance that it's an op. Policemen were not killed, but they were serious wounds. And if the people of Ferguson are feeling worked over, it's because they are. And then, in fact, the Ebola shriek meter got turned back on with the announcement that an American health worker who had contracted Ebola in Africa is soon to be returned to be treated in the Washington area. So these kinds of things tend to happen at tax time. Instead of writing a piece on Ferguson, et cetera, I republished something called Tax Time Covert Ops from March 2009. And because it's, you know, these kinds of situations tend to happen and get more extreme at tax time. And I'll give you an example of why. The Gallup poll just published a new poll. We'll put it up on the blog by tomorrow. Let me read it to you. Americans continue to name the government as the most important U.S. problem, a distinction it has had for the past 4 months. Americans mention of the economy as the top problem, 11% drop this month, leaving it tied with jobs, 10% for second place. So government has surpassed the economy and unemployment as the number one problem. And if Americans are feeling that government is a problem, it's very painful for them to then pay their taxes. Now, especially because corporate taxes have been falling dramatically for the last 15 to 20 years. And so the corporations are carrying a smaller and smaller share of the pie. They're taking out a bigger and share of the pie. And the Americans are carrying the pie at the same time, or paying a bigger and bigger share of the pie at the same time that they're furious about what's going on. And of course, in the middle of that, that's the time when the Bread and Circus Act is designed to ensure that everyone is distracted and keeps paying. If you have enough violence, then people do want government and law and order around. But I hope the covert ops between now and April 16th don't get too bad, but they could. So I just want you to be careful. And if you see these kinds of ugly situations, make sure not to just remember you may be, you know, watching a more extreme version of reality TV show. Money and markets. We had a strong day in the U.S. markets, which meant they came back. And now we see the S&P is essentially flat for the year. It's up about 0.35%, so a third of 1%. Europe is flying. The DAX is now up 20% year to date. The developed markets away from U.S. and Canada are up 4.3%. The long treasury has come way down. It's only up now 1% for the year. The corporate aggregate ETF up 0.39%. 1.3% for the year. The emerging market's still down 1.32%. China right now is down about 0.82. The American press has just been beating on China all week long, including a big piece in the Wall Street Journal by someone from Brookings saying that the Communist Party was bound to fail. China was going to break up and, you know, all sorts of things. I disagree. I think China's remarkably strong, although they certainly have their problems. And gold is now down 2.5 as the dollar rose. Gold has gotten hit very hard. Franklin and I talk a lot about that on the interview today. And but, you know, gold had been up 10% for the year. So this is quite a disappointment because the downward trend continues. And as Franklin and I discussed, gold has the potential, if it really breaks the current lines, to go very, very or significantly lower and stay in a bull market. So this could just be the consolidation. But the downward trend clearly continues. And so keep your eye on interest rates. Keep your eye on the U.S. dollar index. And keep your eye on the gold price. Wall Street Journal had a very interesting article called Hungry Market Eats Up Oil Bonds and pointed out that U.S. and Canadian oil and gas companies have sold $8.4 billion in stocks since the beginning of the year and $4.7 billion in bonds, really grabbing capital, which makes a lot of sense. Why not store, you know, shore up their balance sheets particularly sort of given the uncertainty of things? We see Goldman doing everything it can to bash oil, coming out at the beginning of the week saying oil is going to 40, then the vice chairman, Gary Cohen, giving an interview saying it could go to 30. You almost wonder if they aren't on the Russia bashing team. Kiplinger says 70 to 75 by spring, and I tend to vote with them, but I still think that oil and gas may be one of the best opportunities in the U.S. markets, and the question really is when is the time to take advantage of the opportunity? Because if it's going to go to 30 before it goes to 70 and 75, you definitely want to wait. So we'll just keep an eye on that. But again, I think it's going to be very interesting to see what happens to oil and the oil and gas companies this year. Meantime, the oil company's actions really underscore one of the advantages that the U.S. has. Our security markets offer a lot of liquidity when the banks tighten. It's part of Europe's problem and why they are talking now about significantly broadening capital market access, particularly the middle-sized and small-cap companies. Munis, which had quite a great year last year, were down 1% in February, and they're really under pressure, and that is another indication that the bond market is concerned about rising interest rates, particularly on the long end. An article from Swiss from Martin Armstrong that I've been trying to confirm but haven't been able to, but I put a link up on the blog to it. The Swiss are implementing NSA-type surveillance features. If the Swiss are doing this, I'm sure I'll bet you anything it's part of the American strong-arm package that was part of the bank deals. But I could no more prove that than the man in the moon. But I think it's very interesting if they can get the Swiss to do that, then there really is no way. And I posted one article about it. There's a discrimination lawsuit going on targeted at Kleiner Perkins in Silicon Valley. And it's very interesting to watch because the culture of Silicon Valley is very much engineered to create totalitarianism and to use technology to create totalitarianism, but to make it look cool in the process of doing it. And there's, women are very much sidelined and kept down, and the culture is designed to basically try and get as many fiercely ambitious young men who are, I sometimes think their favorite men are ones who are slightly autistic or have Asperger's, but people who are really either incapable of empathy with the broad human race or seem to be psychopathically infantile. People like Zuckerberg, that's how he strikes me. But you get these fiercely ambitious young men who really are clueless about how the bigger system go and are quite on board for doing anything. And you encourage them very much in a culture where there's no one to say, wait, what are you doing? Think And, you know, it's very much, it's not unlike some of what I saw on Wall Street. They want to keep women out, not because they're discriminating against sex, but because women are going to ask too many questions and stop the good times from rolling. And so if you want to take things in a direction which is anti-human, you want to keep the women out anyway. But so you have a culture that's just remarkably unfriendly to women in many different ways. So it's very interesting to watch this lawsuit go on. I'm usually not particularly interested in this stuff, but this one is it's sort of opening up a can of worms that Silicon Valley has yet to really face or deal with. There is a lawsuit coming on March 16th. A lot of times these folks settle before they go to trial. I'm hoping this one doesn't settle. We've talked about it before. The Wall Street Journal had an article this week, "The Bank That Will Not Buckle." In 2011, the Federal Housing Finance Agency sued Nomura and 17 other financial institutions on the theory that they misled Freddie and Fannie about the mortgages that they were originating and securitizing through Freddie and Fannie. I cannot tell you how totally absurd that accusation is. The engineering of the housing bubble was very much engineered top-down through Freddie and Fannie, through FHA, through the White House, through Treasury. The notion that they were misled, it's just, you know, it's the pot calling the kettle black. It's totally absurd. I can only discern from this that the Japanese and Nomura didn't get the kind of backdoor bailouts and kickbacks that Goldman and the Americans firm did that made it possible for them to settle using the money that came around through the back door. So I hope Nomura drives this all the way to conclusion, but you can check some of the articles up on the blog. I've got another good one on this, but it's I must tell you that if Nomura ever gets full disclosure in court, it will blow up the global financial system, as the government has said. So that's why they keep saying they shouldn't have to disclose all these different things that really happened. We had our 12th Team Awesome Solari Circle. It was a fascinating conversation this week. The member who has been authorized to buy the last two times is stalled on buying. And it's very interesting to watch because if you're in the markets right now, you're getting so many mixed signals, and it can be so unnerving. It can create a very conservative inclination, which we have definitely evidenced over the last 4 weeks. We'll see what happens next, although certain parts of the portfolio are flying. I put up another commentary this week called Another Creepy Wearable Fizzles. We saw Apple come out with Apple Watch. And it's almost as though all the wearables have just completely fizzled because, let's face it, people don't want to pay to be monitored or to live in a police state. And the last thing anybody wants to do is walk around with a very fashionable monitoring device that allows the NSA to track you and know everything you're doing. It's just, you know, it's too gruesome for words. Anyway, so clearly somebody on the committee that runs the planet said, well, you know, everybody loves Apple. Get them. If anybody can make this go, Apple can. So big push, big effort to really push the watch. And so far the market's yawning, and I think it fizzles because the effort by Silicon Valley to make totalitarianism a fashionable consumer choice, I just don't see how you do it. But to me, it's all the effort to do it proves that when the committee that runs the planet really wants a problem solved, they're willing to keep throwing the most talented, creative people at it until they get it solved. Hillary Clinton email scandal. I normally don't talk about presidential campaign baseball, but I think this is very important to watch. And I put up a series of different articles. I happen to know a lot about email discovery in legal situations, particularly related to government, because I litigated over these issues for many, many years. And if you look at Clinton's problem, she's got a very serious problem. Potentially, she's broken three serious laws. One is using private email on classified matters. Another relates to, in my opinion, to obstruction of justice. And finally, the Clinton Foundation was fundraising with the same countries and people that was dovetailing with her activities as Secret of State, and how that might relate to what's on the email, we don't know. Now, some of the email has been destroyed, which gets us back to the obstruction of justice problem. The political problem she has, in addition to what's going on with the email, which is we now have three congressional committees on the case, and the Department of State has reopened a related case, court case. And so this thing could balloon into an enormous amount of work for Clinton and her team. And if any of them continue to dig, I'm sure they can find evidence of one of those laws or one set of laws being broken, if not all three. And then it just depends on what the relationship is with the administration, because obviously Obama and the Department of Justice can protect her throughout all of this in the interests of serving the Democratic Party. But it's going to be, this is going to get much bigger before it gets smaller. Anyway, she has another big political issue, and that is that you can see a lot of the people backing her think that this time around we're going to play the women card, and that's going to help get Hillary Clinton elected. And again, it's what we talked about. We've talked about for the last 2 weeks. A lot of the old tactics, the 90 games, aren't working. It's the same problem in the Ukraine. The old tactics are just stale. They're not working. And it's clear the Americans need to learn new tactics. And it's, you know, it wasn't the women card, but it was the race card with Obama. That was played, and now people have been very badly burned on it. And essentially what most women in the United States want is they want leadership that ensures a better future for their kids and grandkids. And, you know, frankly, you know, experimenting with just putting somebody in there because it's politically clever and cute to have a woman is not something really that appeals to them. And it's all part of why so many people think that the government is the number one problem. They need government to focus on reality and things that really matter, and not play these kinds of old tactic games. Anyway, so a legal problem and a political problem. So it's making that part of the politics in America that much more interesting. I explained in the last couple of weeks that the administration is doing a lot to juice up the housing market coming into the 2016 election. To do that and to win elections, they need to do something about student loans. They need to get young people on their side. 13 senators now, with support from the president, have introduced a new bill called the Fairness for Struggling Students Act of 2015. The goal of the act is to give students the ability to wipe out student loans in bankruptcy when it's private debt, not when it's government debt, the ultimate hypocrisy. I'm sure they're doing it because they can't come up with the appropriations to cover doing it for the government. But according to Bloomberg, there are at least 850,000 private students who have loans equaling $8 billion who are in default, and giving relief to 850,000 private students, student loans, that's a big relief. Anyway, you're going to need that to kickstart the housing market. Young people aren't buying homes, and one of the reasons is student loans. And if you're going to give massive subsidies to immigrants and leave your students bankrupt, that's not going to help you win a 2016 election. Now, one of the things for sure that Clinton and her backers have wanted is to make sure that Andrew Cuomo is dead in the water, Cuomo being the governor of New York and someone who's very politically ambitious. Interestingly enough, Cuomo's got an investigation on his tail, a federal investigation, and it looks very potentially dangerous. But a new website is launched. I put a link up on the blog because it's an interesting hint at what some of the politics are. It's called Hedge Clipper, and it does a very extensive and very professional investigative reporting on the relationships between the governor and large hedge fund donors. And it really looks like Cuomo has quite a posse on his tail, and it would not surprise me if he did not see the end of his term. Tomb Raider story. If you've ever seen Tomb Raider, you'll have a sense of what I'm talking about. There are lots of accusations accusing ISIS of destroying Iraqi antiquities, and requests that the American military do something to stop them and to save the Iraqi antiquities. I will tell you, we'll put up several articles by tomorrow. I think one of the, if you look at all the reasons that Mr. Global might have created the Islamic State, the sort of rounding up and whether destroying or capturing and suppressing and hiding the antiquities, I think that is an unbelievably important goal coming all the way from the top. There is a great deal of evidence of our true history in the Middle East, and one of the things we've been seeing since 9/11 is a real effort by the empire to round it all up and whether destroy it or grab it and move it to the British Museum. And I think it's very important for the politics to have someone like the Islamic State doing it rather than the American military. Too many people are going to ask too many questions. But it's a very dirty game, but I would pay attention to it because I think it's more important than certainly the press is making out. Our hero this week is John Schur, who is the former Associated Press Bureau Chief in South Carolina. He was Executive Director of the South Carolina Press Association, and he was a chairman of the South Carolina Press Association's Freedom Information Committee. He was known as a dogged fighter for open government transparency, and we certainly need more people like him. So say a prayer for John Schur's family as they mourn his passage. Ask Catherine. We've got a lot of good questions. I'll read the first one very quickly. It's long. I live in the big city of Seattle, and somehow the local bank prospects don't seem very realistic. I intend to explore joining a credit union, though. I'm still working on trying to find out where to keep my cash. I'm not sure how the Dodd-Frank Reform Act will impact bank accounts and money market funds held in a large brokerage account. For example, UBS has both a bank and brokerage firm. If I hold my money in the money market account under the Dodd-Frank reform, can those funds be used to pay off the secured creditors of the bank before the clients? Using the Dodd-Frank Reform Act, can bank account monies be used to pay the secured creditors before allowing bank depositors to take their monies out? I believe in Cyprus, people who held more than $100,000 in bank accounts lost more of what they had. Was there something like FDIC in that country, too? No one has specifically addressed what Cyprus did regarding brokerage for money market accounts. Do you know? I'm trying to figure out if my monies would be safer in a money market brokerage account or bank account, or should I do a combination of both? I heard what you said in your quarterly report about institutional diversification, and I will do that as well. The only banks near me are major banks. From what I've been able to research, UBS and Wells Fargo have less derivative exposure and less risk regarding the Dodd-Frank Reform Act, claiming their depositor funds than JP Morgan Chase or BAC. Would you concur with that assessment? One of the things you spoke about in your local banking talk was assessing a bank's balance sheet. While I do have considerable financial background, I do not feel competent to make such a complex discernment. Do you ever put out a list of brokers or financial advisors you recommend? Thanks, Catherine. I really appreciate your knowledge and willingness to encourage us to place our monies in environments which will improve and build our communities. Okay. If I was really going to research and answer all those questions, it would... that would take a week. So let me cut to the chase. What I would do in your situation is I would find a great local credit union where you can establish and maintain a real personal relationship, and I would do most of my banking business through that. I would never have a brokerage and a bank in the same institution. I like diversifications of custodians, and one of the advantages of a sound bank or credit union is it keeps you in a different system than the brokerage system. So I would always keep them separate. Not to say that I wouldn't own FDIC insured funds through brokerage. I think it's one of the best ways to keep your cash in a brokerage. So what I would do is I would keep the bank separate from your brokerage account, and I would also get a bank where I could put FDIC deposits. As long as you're FDIC insured, you don't care if it's in the money market or in the CD. But I would use the credit union for most of your banking. I haven't looked at Wells and UBS recently, but my impression is, yes, they do have lower derivatives positions. And UBS ran through a very stinky period, but it appears that there was a lot of jumping up and down in Switzerland, and we probably see stronger governance there. But I would stick, as I think your instincts are sound, you want to stick with the bank with the lowest a derivative position possible. But again, I don't, as I said in the equity overview, the first quarter equity overview, I think as long as you have FDIC insurance, you're going to be fine. Certainly for now, if it changes, you will definitely hear it here. Another long question with lots of detail about somebody's experience with hospital and medical fraud. I don't have enough information to give you an opinion about what might have happened. With all kinds of financial fraud, whether medical or other areas, there are thousands of fact patterns. They're literally a joy of cooking, kind of, you know, thousands of recipes. So it's impossible to say without an extraordinary amount of data and legal information and knowledge about the politics and the economics of the situation. It's impossible to know. That's why it always feels like a puzzle palace. This was someone who also asked me to ask Dr. Farrell if he'd be interested in looking at the Rh negative blood question, and I emailed him and he said he already has. So I will talk with him more about it. I don't know a lot about it, but we'll check it out. So thanks for that question. Okay, for being the powerful, mighty person you are and making the most important, except some personal stuff, I guess, information available, have you ever considered any political positions, as I think you would make one of the world's greatest leaders of all time? Nonetheless, you do a marvelous and yeoman's job of improving the world. Maybe you're just where you're supposed to be, as you and the nature of the current political situation are completely antithetical. Thank you for being such an inspiration. Thank you for your kind words. I think there's, you know, I never like to say never, because you never know what's going to happen, but I think there's about a 1 in a million chance that I would be offered or would accept a political position. To be offered and to accept, I would need to be in agreement with Mr. Global's agenda, and Mr. Global would have to trust me. And it's hard to imagine that alignment could happen, certainly anytime soon. Now, I say that, and to this day, I don't really know who's on the committee to save the world or control the world. So I don't really understand who Mr. Global is and what his agenda is, other than conjecture. I think I can make the most valuable contribution at Solari and from the private side. I'm much more a private investment and money person than I am a political person, but I appreciate the kind words and I'm ready to come into alignment with everybody and everything. And wouldn't that be wonderful? Dear Catherine, this week you posted an article on the blog describing how the amount of gold being purchased in China has been dramatically underreported to us. And quoting from the article, the author said, "I'm open-minded towards the possibility there is an agenda that is allowing China to buy as much gold for as little fiat as possible to make them accumulate whatever necessary before a monetary reset. I see no other explanation for the events unfolding in front of our eyes." I think that's one very logical explanation, but there are others. I'm not convinced, in fact, if the U.S. dollar runs a severe bear trap globally, you could see a significant amount of gold swinging back. If gold gets driven down to 700, you could see a lot swinging back. There are numerous reasons that Mr. Global would want to spread the inventory around. And remember, one of the challenges of dealing with this, and I talked with this, Dr. Farrell and I are doing a two-part series on called Planet Debt, and he and I talk about this. There are so many hidden inventories and squirrely things going on around the gold and silver, and gold and silver mining. I think there's been a lot more mining going on than people may know. We really don't have sufficient information to understand what's happening with gold inventories. So whether it's a dollar bear trap could have things swinging back the other way, or because the Mr. Global wants the inventory spread around for many reasons, including a global reset, I just don't think we have sufficient information to know. Dear Catherine, what are the specific statistics one should be concerned with before investing in a neighborhood? That is an excellent, excellent question. Thank you for that question. It would take an entire Salary Report for me to answer that. So I'm going to think about the best way to answer it and see if I can't dig out some of the old articles. But I really thank you for that question. It's one we should be talking about. Let's go to the movies, and let's go to the movies. I chose the fifth season of Downton Abbey. I'm an enormous Downton Abbey fan, and if you like PBS kind of stuff, it's bound to be a favorite. It's the story of an aristocratic British family, the Crawley family, and their friends and estate. And the fifth season is really about the changes that happen in the culture, the economy, and politics following World War I, and it's quite marvelous to see this group of people living through a period of extraordinary change that rocks their world repeatedly. And to me, their tale really inspires, I said this on the blog, us to cherish values that contribute to success in changing times. And one of the things you see is that caring about people and empathy is essential to people managing through change. But it's always a reminder, watching the Crawleys function, that hard work and discipline and empathy can manage and create a lot of inspiration and possibility and opportunity. The interview, of course, today is with our dear friend and colleague, Franklin Sanders of The Money Changer. And Franklin and I talk bluntly about the different ways precious metals could go. One of the challenges, if you look at the charts, Franklin made some wonderful charts, and I would encourage you to check them out on the blog, and we talk through them, is you can have a consolidation within a bull market, and it can go on this long, and that consolidation could take us as far down as 700 or 800 on the gold price, and similar kinds of drops, if not more, in the silver price and in percentage terms. And then, you know, we'd have to get up back up through about 1530 to really re-prove that we're in a primary trend. So that's an enormous swing in percentage terms. But the consolidation continues. As I said, we were up 10% in gold for the year, and now we're down 2.5% for the year. So it's been quite a bad swing in this last month. But very good interview. And Franklin, God bless him, helped me address the issue of a U.S. Constitutional Convention, which I am mightily opposed to, and constantly encourage everyone to make sure that their state legislature never calls for a U.S. Constitutional Convention. So Franklin took some time at the end of the interview to help me address why that's so very important. If you haven't, great background for some of that question is an interview series we did with Franklin, and I put a link up on the blog, Precious Metals, the Top 10 Dates in American History. It's great background for understanding the relationship between the Constitution and monetary policy and law. Okay. That's it for today. Coming up, we have just an amazing lineup. Next week, Richard Dolan is joining us for a discussion of what's up underground. It was clear from the Secret Space Program experience that there's a bigger part of the GNP has been going underground than I thought. And never say America hasn't been investing in infrastructure. We have. You just don't see it. So that's a great discussion. That'll be next week. And then a two-part series on March 26th and April 2nd, Planet Debt, Part 1 and Part 2 with Dr. Joseph Farrell. I wanted to have a serious look at the financial system or the debt system and the bond market, but from the point of view of somebody who would help me integrate what the covert world and the hidden secret sort of financial system meant and what the story was on what the debt was and how it worked and why. So it's really an integration of the covert side of economy and geopolitics with sort of some of the most important things happening in the financial markets today. A very rich discussion. It was a two-hour discussion, so we're splitting it into two parts. And then the following will be, we have John Rappaport coming up with a great one on imagination, how people try and destroy your imagination and how you can rebuild it. And fabulous, fabulous stuff from John. Then we're going to have Ann Williamson back in, and then I'm going to be doing the wrap-up. So we have quite a full schedule in March and April, and very rich. So until next week with Richard Dolan, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.